At first I was told that what we were to do tonight was to debate. I have no desire to score debating points. Certainly not with my good friend Rabbi Saul Berman. Nor do I think that the subjects that we discuss tonight, the future of Orthodoxy, I prefer the future of Teva here in America. Is one that we dare be flippant about by scoring these kinds of debating points. Orthodoxy, right, center, left field, right field, are for me rather meaningless. I don't think that the terms mean it. My own experience over the past years has been such that the categorization of labels I found to be not only destructive, but simply inaccurate. But there is a serious question, one that is deadly serious, and that is, what is it going to take to be a Torah observant Jew in the next decade? Who will survive, and how we will survive, and how will we survive? There has been so much sloganeering. That has gone into the question of the survival of Yiddishkeit here in America, that we have failed to look at real problems. I will talk about several of them tonight. And I think if we really wanted to delve into them deeply, we would need not a night and not a week, but more like a year. I will suggest to you that Torah will survive in this country if, but only if, Torah is the nekuda pnimis, lies at the heart of our existence. It is going to be either or. I will tell you shortly what I mean. But we will not be able to fake our commitment to Torah. It will either be real, deep, and all-encompassing, or it will not exist. Secondly, I will suggest to you that Torah will exist in this country if, but only if, there is a total mental commitment, total psychological commitment to the integrity of Halacha. Selected portions of halacha, as I like them or as I see them, will destroy the fabric of Torah in this country. And indeed, not only will destroy, but has destroyed it already. Thirdly, we will have to come to grips with the concept once again of what it means to be an Eved Hashem, a servant of God. And fourth of all, we will have to be scrupulously careful about our encounters with the secular world. Let me start at the beginning. There is a myth. I believe it is, deeply it is a myth, that there is something called synthesis. That one can somehow rather magically synthesize all of the wonderful things of the secular world and the Jewish world in one. I am even told that I am a model of synthesis. My friends, if I'm a model of synthesis, the world is in bad shape. What do I mean? There is an injunction in the Torah. Ve'atem tiyu li mamleches kohanim ve'goy kodesh. What did the Rebbe Shlomo want? Not a small task. You shall be a nation of kohanim and a holy nation. Kedusha. Kedusha is asked of us. That is our charge. Our charge is Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somi. I see the Rabbeinu Shel Olam for me always. I don't live in that kind of world. You don't live in that kind of world. What is it that motivates me? What is it that I think when I get up in the morning? Tell you these days what it is I think about. I think about the Agent Orange case first. And I think about the all-consuming nature of the responsibility I have therein. I think about the fact that I'm that I have a lot of preparation before I teach at Michigan next year. I think about a lot of things. But I don't think that I think, first and foremost, what happens to your neshama? How much teva? What is your going to be your avdus Hashem today? You know, I remember back to my youth. I had a melamed, I had a teacher who taught me Aleph Beis. His name was Riven Lichtig, Olav HaShalom. Riven was a downtrodden, beaten down, old Russian Jew who had not 1/100th of the knowledge of Torah that I possess. And in his old age, Riven was blind, and he was blind because, I believe, every morning, starting at 4:30 in the morning, he cried through the entire town. He had a tragic life. If you woke Riven Lichtig at 2:30 in the morning and asked Riven, startle him out of his sleep, Riven, what's Bisti? What are you? I know it's time for the day, and I eat. I hope nobody wakes me at 2:30 in the morning and asks me that question.
I am scared silly of what the answer is.
I'm afraid it may be I am a lawyer. The Gemara tells us, Doivris Rishonim, the earlier generations, Osu Teirosan Kva, Teire was the mainstay of their life. Umalachton and their work, Avoy, was something temporary. Zu Vizu Niskaimu Biyodon, they had both. Doivris Rishonim, the later generations, Osu Malachton Avoy, they made their work. Their work, the mainstay of their life. And Tergosan Eloi, the Tergosan was temporary when you got around to it, you thought about being what it is, Machoi Bosoi Beilomi, what is your responsibility in the world? And the Gemara says, Zubazu, Wainiskan, or the other, they either had Tergosan or they had Melocha, they had neither. The problem is very simple. We live in a world in which the secular world will give us, they will give us all the chumkeit we want. You can believe me that I walk into Hofstra dressed this way. If tomorrow I should decide to wear my Shabbos tikkun boots, I should decide to wear my shneimel and bechershit, and come into class, the surprise would last for 5 minutes and everybody would go over and get over it, it would be business as usual. They will give me as much chumkeit as I want. The only thing that the American world wants from us is our souls. They will give us chumkeit, they'll give you plenty. You can have kosher, and you can have Shabbos, and you can have yontif, you can have whatever you want. But don't tamper with our system. Don't tamper with our value system. A value system which is hedonistic, a value system which is sick and very sick in matters which are central to the concept of Kiddushin. So I don't think the issue is whether or not I should be studying science, or my children should be studying science or mathematics or law. The issue is whether or not the Nekuda Pnimis, the reason that they exist, the reason that they get up in the morning, that which drives them all the time, is their responsibility to themselves, their responsibility to God, the responsibility to take their neshamas and to make them holy. And my friends, I tell you that goal is not terribly compatible with the world outside. How we make peace with it, or how we deal with it, and I will talk about a bit later. But I think that where the issue is not right, left, or center, the issue is what is going to be the Nekuda Pnimis of your life. What is going to, how are you going to answer the question? How am I going to answer the question? Our forefathers, my father Zechon Levracha, and my grandfather, and my great grandfather, and his father before him, and his father before him, lived the answer to that question every day. It was unquestionable. The Jew who was an Amoris, who knew nothing, who had absolutely no Torah knowledge, knew the answer to that question. And he don't. Secondly, I believe that there is going to have to be a total and complete commitment to the Shulchan Aruch. It has seized cease being difficult to be a Jew. It is not hard to eat at La Différence. And Shmira Shabbos has almost ceased, in most instances, to be a problem. And Tzum Shabbos morning does not taste bad. And what we have developed, and again with regard, out regard to label, although I believe, and I will, and I believe that the problem exists at, on the left, a kind of casual laissez-faire attitude toward halacha. You do it if you like it, you don't do it if you don't. If it feels good, it's all right. If it doesn't feel good, nishkepalach if you don't. Now let me make a distinction, and one that is very important. The issue to me is not how observant. I am not dealing now with the level of an observance of any individual. Each and every one of us has got to face the struggle, our own struggles. But what we cannot live with ideologically is selected readings of the Shulchan Aruch. A casual attitude. Tachas HaMishpacha, well, maybe yes and maybe no. We're dealing with Isurei Tovos, matters which go to the heart, to the lifeline of being the Jew. Kashrus. How careful or how necessary is it to be so fully observant? Nishkepalach, if what I eat in that kind of restaurant, in this kind of restaurant, ichveg yo, ichveg nish. It's interesting. We're worried about dioxin in parts per trillion. We're worried about EDP in parts per trillion. But if someone chas v'sholem doesn't eat at somebody else's house because he is nizer on kashrus, because he's afraid that maybe there will be a chash that he will take into his mouth that which the Torah prohibited. He's a chnoch. By accident, he should not eat at one part per trillion. But Tamfis, L'chatchila, we will deal with Bittul Berov. One out of two is all right. Now, I don't mean to demean, chas v'sholem, to demean the halacha. There is a halachic structure to which we have to have fidelity. And the halachic structure paskins on kashrus, and it paskins on everything. But we have to ask our Meirahid, look, we have to ask those who pass in our time. I have asked Meirahid, look, those who pass in Shabbos in various communities, how often do they hear a Shaila of birth control? Silence is death. The Shaila, the question, goes to Yitzhak Kolis, Yitzhak Misa. Now, if we don't care about Yitzhak Kolis and Yitzhak Misa, then we don't care. Then I guess we part company. But there is a structure in halacha which cannot be disregarded and which cannot be handled by everybody as I like it and as I see it. And if I don't like it, it will also be good. And commitment to limud haTorah. I am as aware of anyone, I believe that anyone is, with the problems that exist on the right. There are serious problems. But the commitment to limud haTorah is something to behold. And again, this is not necessarily tied to the right, because there are many in various camps whose commitment to limud haTorah is complete. But I tell you, the commitment is not complete if we do not impose upon ourselves deep and daily commitment for ourselves for the study of Torah, so that our lives are totally, that the reason for our existence is tied to the Kedusha of Torah, we will be swallowed up. Many years ago, the Baal Shem HaKadosh said that it would all come down to the question of Avdoi Levoi Avdoi, to those who served God and those who didn't. Mitzvahs are not something that one totes up for the number of brownie points that one gets. Today was a 20 mitzvah day or 25 mitzvah day. The Baal Shem HaKadosh used to say that a Jew who came home after a hard day's work and was starving, and before he sat down to eat, knocked off ma'ariv in 30 seconds flat, but did not sit down to eat before ma'ariv, because the Chazal told him that whoever sits down to eat before ma'ariv and puts off the obligation to daven is guilty of a serious infringement of the Divrei Chazal. The Baal Shem HaKadosh said, for that ma'ariv the angels in heaven trembled, because man had put God first. All the angels in heaven could not have faced the test of whether ma'ariv comes first or supper comes first. And our test in our time will not be X amount of mitzvahs. It will be the test of whether or not someone is anointed, whether or not someone dedicates his life, whether the reason that someone exists is because he is anointed Hashem. Now, one more word, and I think I've gone over my time already. One more word about this question of how we deal with the secular world. I will tell you that that the way I live, I have not passed down to my children. I have not expose them to the secular world in a heavy way. I find precious little in the American secular society that I wish to give over to my children. I believe that its values are corrupt, it is hedonistic, it is sick, it is a sick society with regard to sexuality. And the entire value system of the secular world is one that I do not seek to pass on to them. Now, we're going to have to live in the world. We're going to have to deal with it. And I will hope that I and they deal with it with all the care that one would take when one is dealing with a cobra. and I will deal with it not on the terms that anyone else is to give me. I will create a ghetto around myself and around my home, in which I hope that the values which I hold dear are primary and are nurtured. And from there, I will venture out as often as I must, no more and no less. I will not embrace it. I will not make love to it. I will not synthesize it, because I don't even know what that means. I will deal with it. I cannot escape it. That is the curse of Gullus, that we cannot escape. But under no circumstances will I make peace with it.
I must tell you that as I began and continued my preparation for my speech here tonight, it got to be a painful experience. It became painful because it was very clear to me that I would be talking to myself. The great Bali Musa used to say, it is worthy to give a shmooze for hundreds of people if one person would listen, even if that person were the speaker himself. So what I am going to undertake tonight is, if you will forgive the term, because it arises out of the women's liberation movement, some consciousness raising. Rabbi Sherman made mention of the fact that we had become uncaring. I think there are other words to describe what it is that we experience in our society. From my vantage point, as a lawyer and as one that deals with Hamish folk, we become contentious, quick to make judgments, self-righteous, quite sure of ourselves, intolerant, pretty long list, but I think that much of the shoe fits. Now, we're not bad people. I don't view yourself as bad, and I guess I don't view myself as bad either. But if we share some of the attributes that I mentioned, it's important to figure out why. And what it is that we can do about it. I will turn for some analysis to some psukim in the Torah that you are all familiar with, but to some of the mefolshei Torah that you may not be familiar with and that I was not familiar with before recent weeks. The Torah in Parshas Lech Lecha tells us a story which is all familiar to us. We know the story. Sarai, Imenu, was childless, and she gave her Shivcha Hagar to Avram. And Hagar became pregnant. And the Torah tells us, Vatere ki harasa, she saw Hagar saw that she had become pregnant. Vatekal gvirta be'eneha, and her mistress became light, not didn't deal with her seriously. And in fact, Rashi says, Vatekal gvirta be'eneha explains, Amra, she said, Sarai zu, this Sarah, ein sisra kigluya, her private life is not as her public image. Mare atzma kihilo hitzadekes, tzadekes, she shows herself off as if she is a tzadekes. The ein a tzadekes, and she's not a tzadekes. Shaloi zochsali roin, kol hashtonim, she wasn't zeichet to pregnancy through all the years. And the Anini Sabarti, and she became pregnant immediately. And Sarah was indignant because not only had Hagar delivered this message to her, she had delivered it in the presence of Avram Avinu, and Avram was silent. And she turned with considerable anger to Avram. And the Torah tells us that Avram told her, Hine shivchose biyodei, here's your shivche in your hands, asilo, do to her hatoy v'anech. Vata'anea sorai, and sorai oppressed her, vativrach miponea, and she ran away. What Hagar did was unforgivable. Not only did she hit below the belt in a way which was cruel and evil, but she attempted to undercut Sarah with Avram Avinu, accusing Sarah basically being a hypocrite. It was the worst sort of conduct. Sarah had every right to her anger. Every right to be upset. Every right to set things straight. Let me read you two lines from a Ramban. Listen carefully. On the posik vata'anel sorai vativrach miponel, the Ramban says, Choto imenu, our mother Sarah sinned, bi'inui hazeh, with her oppression of Hagar. V'gam Avram, and Avram also sinned, v'hanichoi la'asois kein, when he let her do this. Ushama Hashem El Onyo, God heard Hagar's oppression. Vinosan Lobain, and he gave her a son, Yishmael. Sheyehe Pera Odom, La'anoi Zera Avram Visore Bechol Mineho Inui. You hear? You hear what's going on? Because Sarah reacted to the outrage, and she oppressed Hagar. Vishama Hashem al Anya got murdered.
And he gave her a son, a peda odom, whose function would be la'anoy zera Avram, to oppress the children of Avram, v'soga, b'chol minoy hu'inui, with all kinds of oppression. Comes the Maral in the Maaseh Hashem and says, he says, you know, Yishmael really should not have been called Yishmael, he should have been called Shemuel, Kishoma Hashem, God heard, right? He should have been named Shemuel. Why was he named Yishmael? For the future. Because he says, this is the Ramban. He, the Rabbanu Shalom, gave her Yishmael, who would in the future oppress Zerah Avram. If today a bus is blown up with Yiddish kinder in Yerushalayim or in Eretz Yisrael by the Palestinians, the Ramban tells us where it came from. If children or settlers are shot at and killed and murdered, it came from here. What we don't realize is the consequences of bringing hurt to another human being. The consequences of bringing hurt to another human being. Right, justified, correct, all of that, all very interesting. But if there was an inui that there shouldn't have been somewhere above the middah that was necessary, then it will play itself off l'doyre doyres. We're talking several thousand years, and the Ramban tells us we still suffer from it. Yesterday's Parshas Vayetze. We're told of Yankiv's final decision that he was about to abandon Lavan. What kind of chevreman Lavan is, we all know. Almost no redeeming social value whatsoever. Hard to think of a nice thing to say about him. And Yankiv picks himself up and escapes with Rachel and Leah. And the Torah tells us, and the Lashon is very interesting, Vayignav Yankiv es lev Lavan harami. Yankiv stole the heart of Lavan. Later on in the parasha, we find out when Lavan has this discussion with Yankiv back and forth, we find out that Yankiv explains his reason for doing so, because otherwise he was afraid that Lavan would not let them go. But when the Torah relates the story, the Torah relates the story in plain, simple terms. Vayignav Yankov eslev Lavan Arami. Which is preceded immediately by a posik of Vayignav Rochel esatrofim. Rochel stole Lavan's idols. And we all know the Maimon Chazal why she stole Lavan's idols. She stole Lavan's idols because she sought to separate him from Avodah Zarah. A lofty goal. So she took the Avodah Zarah out of Lavan's hands. terrible thing. I went looking. And yesterday I ran across this Zohar. The Zohar HaKadosh in Parshas Vayetze. Listen to what he says. The Avogah, the Ruchel Ihi Avidas, even though Ruchel did what she did, to take her father away from Avodah Zorah. Isanshus, she was punished.
Why? For this act of secreting the Trofim and taking the Trofim, the Avodah Zorah, from Lavan. Why? And how was she punished?
The this lady Binyamin, she didn't raise Binyamin. She didn't even have 1 hour in this world together with Binyamin. Why? The Zohar says, begin Sara de Avua,
because of the pain that she brought to her father. Afal Gavdis Gavnus Latoy, even though she had a Kavana Latoy, she meant right.
Who did she do the avla to? To love her. What did she do? She took the avodah zarah away from him.
But she brought him pain. And Isaiah tells us that pain extracts a price.
Vayidnoiv Yankov eslav Lovan. Explanations come later, but when the Torah puts it down, Yankov stole the heart of Lovan. Lovan didn't get a chance to kiss his children goodbye.
Seems to me we got some serious thinking to do.
Very serious thinking to do. In fact, so serious that it is almost paralyzing. From time to time, I try to help people.
Try to do things.
Sometimes you gotta be mean. Sometimes you gotta be rough. And you bring pain to people. The Afal Gavdi Skavnus Latoiv doesn't answer at all. The act of bringing pain to another human being, to a Hogo, a Mitzvah, to a Lovan Haram, is set forth by the Ramban and the Zohar in a way which is frightening.
If we got to think that any time I deliver pain to another human being, I may be doing an act which has repercussions for doire doires. Let me talk frankly about some things that I think affect us. I said, I think we're insensitive, I think we're contentious, and I think we're intolerant.
There is in our community and in our world a concept which is insidious.
It's the concept of bittul.
Bittul. Not important. He said it. Who's he? I believe that its origin was a survival tactic. We started out as an embattled community, small numbers, with a hostile world around us. One of the ways of dealing with the hostility of the world around us was to identify the other view, the view that was not our view, the view that wasn't our official line, as being nonsense. Bittu. And it was probably right. There was probably reason for it. The problem with bittul is that we have internalized it. It has now become not a weapon only for our enemies, it has become a way of life for ourselves. It doesn't count. If it's not my Rosh Hashiva, it's nicht gerecht. It doesn't mean anything. And it has a terrible internal effect, both on ourselves, in our homes, and in our Moistas HaChinuch. My father Zechanovach always used to say this, and when I was young, I didn't fully fathom it, but as I've grown older, I've grown to appreciate it. He said, Vatera Sora is Yishmoel ben Hoger HaMitzris Metzachek. Sora Sora, Yishmoel Metzachek. Metzachek means laughing. So Rashi says, Metzachek means Gilo Al-Rayas, Aboy Dezogra, Shvichus Domim. She came to Avram and she said, kick him out of the house. My father told me, and I've seen it in Shamshin Ful Hirsch, says an Emel Chavot. He said he thought that the word Metzachek did not mean to laugh. Metzachek meant to be make fun of. Metzachek, upzalach, to make fun of. You don't treat the other guy seriously. And Sova said, look, if this Yishmael would have come and confronted Yitzchak ideologically, that's fine. But that's not what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. Yitzchak could stay in a language of an essay, and Yishmael will say, well, how long is it? 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes? This is the all-time longest of an essay. And if he'll wash his hand, how many times you wash your hand? Two hands, two times, three times, one, which way? So I said, I can't raise my children, I can't raise Yitzchak with cynicism in my home. We've become cynics. And the language of cynicism permeates our street and it permeates our homes. And we find hundreds of opportunities to give a machavek. Doesn't cost anything. It costs. It costs because we are teaching in our home. We're teaching in our home insensitivity. And this bittul in, you know, in this lack of sensitivity and this lack of feeling and the lack of empathy for the pain of another, merely because we have a great goal to accomplish, affects our Moshe Sechina. You know it and I know it. I'm a parent. I got kids going to school. I say two tefillahs when I send my kids to school. That my children shall be talmidei chachamim ahuvim lemaila v'nechmodim lemata. And then I say another tefillah. Rabbeinu shel olam, I hope and pray my children can be talmidei chachamim. But for gosh sakes, if they don't make it to be top flight Talmidei Chachamim, please God, don't have them be treated as outcasts. The goal of Torah, of Talmidei Chachamim, of being able to raise a dog of Talmidei Chachamim is an enormous goal. It's one that we all join. But not in the back of a kid who can't make it. or a kid whose personality is not everyone is created to be the Talmud Chacham. If we are osid, if Soga was osid, litein es adin to the herd of Hoga, and Rachel is osid, litein es adin for the herd of Lavan, Hashem Yerachem, what will we say about the herd of our kids? We have goals. We ought to have goals. We ought to permeate the street and permeate our homes with these goals. But there is another goal, which is that first mitzvah saseh, metol kan yidnish kin nishvetom. And whether it's a child or an adult, we ought to be careful. The cost is enormous. We're playing with concepts that aren't dvorim shel ma bikach. And I'll tell you, I'm guilty. Without making public confession of the particulars, I've done it. I've been so sure of my position that I've been ready to lash out, and have. Not right. There has to be a way to deliver the message without delivering the hurt. And if we're sensitive human beings, we can deliver the message that we want without sending out all the arrows that do the hurt. There are a thousand different ways in which each one of us can start asking ourselves, how sensitive was I? Did I deliver some hurt when it was unnecessary to do so? If we start looking at Yiddish Tzah in terms of not a fleeting moment, but in terms of what it really is, and that is an eternal concept, that for one moment of Tzah, Gans Klal Yisrael, from the time of Sova Yimeinu till this very day, suffer. It means that what we're dealing with, we have to reorder, we have to step back and say, you can't do it that way. Our goals may be noble, but we can't deliver the hurt. Small acts. L'ra have eternal implications, and they do l'tov as well. There's a famous medrash, every darshan uses it, but it's a good one anyway. It's a medrash in Rus. The medrash says that ilu hayu yedea Ruven, that had Ruven known that the Torah would write about him, Vayishma Ruven Vayatzileu Miyodem, that Ruven heard and saved Yosef, he would have carried him on his shoulder to his father. V'ilu hayu yedeya Aaron, and had Aaron but known that the Torah would write about him, V'ro'a v'somach liboy, he would have gone out to meet Moshe with supimim choylos, with a brass band. And Ilu Hayu Yedea Boyez, had Boyez but known that the Torah would write about him that he hand vatitzvat lo koli vatoichel, that he handed Naomi he handed Ruth a place a plate of parched corn and she ate. The Medrash says he would have given her fatted calves to eat. And everybody asked the question, and the question is obvious. What were they looking for? For the press release? Reuven was looking for a better press than the New York Times. What does it mean? I think that the Pshat in the Medrash is very simple. Most of us act, and when we act, we very rarely have a sense of the importance of our conduct. Reuven thought that he was saving Yosef from an immediate situation. That this was the fulcrum point in the history of Klal Yisrael. That had Yosef not been brought together with his brothers and had the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim not happened and finally the reconciliation, that the history of Klal Yisrael was being changed, that he didn't know. He thought he was doing a simple act. Moshe thought he would, Aaron thought that he was going to greet his brother. Fine. Nice to go greet your brother. That he was going to greet Moshe Rabbeinu, the Nois and Teiv L'Amo Yisrael, that he didn't know. Vayas thought he was giving a plate of parched corn to a poor Gioiris. That he was giving courage and mut and strength, as the Mefolshim and Rus say, to Rus, so that she would go on. And that this was an important point in bringing the Melech HaMashiach, that he didn't have any sense. We are middle-class Americans, raised on mediocrity, believe in mediocrity, Abach Yogiton, Abach Nishkiton, Vosid Achilik, who cares? That what we do has eternal significance. That taking somebody who is today out of work and who is in pain and helping him through a day, it may change the entire history of the world. It may be in the realm of the things that ultimately affect how Klal Yisrael is judged and what our history is, it may be of enormous significance. We are not there to judge it. And it's interesting, the Medrash says, when it concludes, it says, you know, once upon a time, a person did a mitzvah, the Navi wrote it down. But today, there is no Navi to write it down. Who writes it down? The Medrash says, Eliyahu writes it down, the Melech HaMashiach and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sign on it. And then the Medrash ends with this pasuk, Oz nidlu yivei Hashem ish el v'cheyu. Then they spoke each to each other, each person, each friend to another, v'yakshev Hashem v'yishma. My friends, the hurt and the insensitivity that we deliver is eternal. And if we can learn as Oz Nidbu Yire Hashem Isha Re'eyu, we can talk to each other. We can be careful not to hurt. The Moshneezchan used to say, "Mio Isha Chofitz Chaim Oyev Yomim Lirois Toiv Netzer L'Shoyin Chemera." Everybody focuses today on Lashon Hara, and it's very important to focus on Lashon Hara, but sometimes we forget why we're not supposed to talk Lashon Hara. We're not supposed to talk Lashon Hara because it hurts. Because it hurts and it creates insensitivity. It hurts. It's a missile. And we have to be to grow ourselves, to be liros betoiv. We have to begin digging out the good. It occurs to me sometimes that this thing is so that when we want to reach our goals, we reach them in such strange ways. We want to raise the level of our learning, so what do? When Lechten and the Rav, the one who is not, doesn't make it. That's a miskabit beklein chaveru in the finest sense of the term. You can't grow Torah off of somebody's pain. Rochel is told, get rid of the trofim, but you can't do it off of the pain of Lavan.
I said when I began that this was painful for me, and it is, because I think I've done it in the past. I think we all have. This lecture is dedicated to the memory of Yiti Leibel, a person, a woman, who had very little of that in her. And it is a testament to her acts that year after year, friends get together to ask themselves, how can we be more sensitive to each other? And I think the first lesson is, be careful about doling out pain. It's a deadly, deadly sin. On the other hand, the smallest act of chesed, the smallest act of chesed, we have the haftocha from the Medrash, that for these acts, Eliyahu writes them down, Umelech HaMashiach V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chos Ma'al Yadayim. What a promise, what a gift. Ultimately, we are told that the Geula Shleima will come from that. Tziyon B'Mishpat Yipodeh V'Shaveha B'Tzedakah.